Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing program to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Lynn Jordan Martin joins us, the senior opinion editor for Fox News Network. She has such a distinguished career, CBS, and so much in television, and now you oversee Fox News. Welcome to Think About It at HBU.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jerry.
And
thanks for having me.
Great to hear you speak today.
Thank you.
And you talked about discernment in journalism, discernment in media. Can you just capsule what you told the students?
I'd love to. So my feeling is that in this very complicated, overheated media market that we are in right now, discernment is what is necessary. We can't just consume news, and much like food, we can't just swallow our food whole. We need to chew it. We need to savor it. We need to taste it. We need to experience it. And we need to ask questions. But it all comes back down to the story. It's always about a story. When you read that story, you need to understand some context. You need to ask, well, what does this really mean? And you need to ask, what's the source of this? Can I find out more about this? Where's this coming from? And we have a lot of resources that will allow us to do that these days. I also believe that as people of faith, we need to ask, when we look at news stories, when we look at the news, when we look at our world, where's God in this story? And typically, people aren't asking that question, but we need to ask that question.
You know, that is such a thought-provoking statement. And it's such a reality that is so invisible to many people. You've helped people understand that. Obviously, you cover all sectors of the news, but you know, explain your position there at Fox.com.
Oh, I'm the senior opinion editor. We have an opinion editor who reports to me and an associate opinion editor who reports to me. And I've said while I've been here in Houston that I really see it as if, because I come from the world of TV originally, that I'm producing a TV show. So every day I think, what's the top story, or what are the top stories I must cover that we really need some sort of commentary on? And then there's other stories that I think about that would be good on the TV show, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. And then we kind of think about how are we going to put the day together? What are we going to feature? What would be good to feature today that would talk to what's going on in the world at this moment, but also some food for thought for the rest of the week? And then we kind of put those things together. And sometimes I go and ask someone, will you please write an opinion piece for me? And sometimes they come to me and they say, may I write about X news story? And so that's what I'm doing. And I'm juggling that all day long. And then also we have so many people who are involved with Fox News. And I am trying to use our talent and also our contributors on that platform, because we have all platforms. We have digital, TV, radio. And we have a podcast or two ourselves. So I'm trying to really use all their talents in every different way. And I want to feature people on the digital side, because that's another part of our audience, a big audience.
Now, this has been a tremendous development, the whole digital scene.
Yes.
And I was just in New York at Tech Fest, the New Yorker put on, listening to those people. And I mean, you have really embraced and helped move the dial. And we're almost the same age, and we've seen a lot of changes. I mean,
yes.
When you think in 2007, the iPhone started a decade ago, I mean, it makes you wonder 10 years from now where we're going to be.
One of the things that I do think is coming is AI, artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And I don't know what that means for discernment, for our consumption, but I think that's coming, where a machine will partly be involved in the journalistic process. I think that could be really exciting. It could be really terrible.
And it's truly possible. I mean, that the pipelines are all going to get more divergent. And I read the other day that Netflix and Amazon alone are spending $14 billion in content. And these billions begin to add up. I mean, it's not like when we were growing up, the big three, is it?
No.
And you worked for one of the big three, CBS. Met your husband at CBS.
It's really true. And there are some disadvantages to only having three big networks, and there are some real advantages. Now we have a much bigger menu. It was sort of like we had three things on the menu, and surprisingly, people were okay with that in a funny way. And now it's just an unlimited menu. It's a giant smorgasbord of media. But I'm not sure where we go from here. And it is interesting, too. I believe that Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those are also media companies.
Mm-hmm.
If 60% of Americans are getting some of their news from Facebook, then that's a media company. And how that news gets on Facebook, how Facebook uses that news, that's all evolving, and media companies are scrambling to figure that out.
Now you have like 50 million people that are coming to Fox.com. The different platforms, Instagram and Facebook, your own website, do you have different teams for different platforms?
Yes, and let me say, we recently had about 50 million people in 1 month for Fox News Opinion, but we are in the billions for our actual website, in the billions. It's really fascinating. And of course, the other thing that I am learning as a journalist, journalists typically are not math people.
Right.
But I have come to love numbers because, of course, I like to see my traffic. I like to see right. how things are doing. And this whole field of analytics is
yes.
really coming on strong, too. And I know, for example, I know that more people read my opinion page in Texas than in any other state. So once in a while, I will be more inclined to accept a story that is Texas-based than I would be about something that's in, say, Kansas.
Sure.
Because I know I have a lot of readers in Texas, and I know what my demographics are. I know what the age is. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating. And these numbers can tell us everything. I mean, you've heard that, big data. And the way you can use that, it's really exciting. It is also a little dangerous in a funny kind of way, too,
sure.
because then the machine, again, is telling you things. But in my case, as an editor, it's really helpful for teaching me what I need to know, what I maybe am missing. I never knew that about. I could have just guessed, but I didn't know that about Texas.
Well, we're not a state, we're a territory. But there's going to be 54 million people in Texas by 2050.
Wow.
Which is but it's a great place, isn't it? What's your impression of Houston?
Oh my gosh, I love Houston. This is an amazing city. I believed it when I heard that Houston was the most diverse city in America, but one of my colleagues was skeptical. So then I looked it up, just like one of my questions, how do you know that? What's the source? So I looked it up myself, and that's been the case since 2010 when it surpassed New York. I think it's just on fire. It seems also like a really nice place to live where people are engaged with one another. And also today is a beautiful day here, and I'm enjoying the weather, and it seems kind of practically perfect in every way.
Well, Lynn, you being here is so important for our academic community because HBU has been in the online space, but in recent months, we've made a dramatic step forward to, in time, create 1,000 courses. So we have 1,000 Southern Residential courses, duplicate that digitally, and then take it internationally. And here we are on the hub of this rather international city. We have 1,700 flights a day out of Houston, 1,000 at Bush and 700 at Hobby, and obviously a huge gateway to Central and South America. But, I can get on a plane in Bush and go anywhere in the world nonstop.
Wow.
Which is wonderful. But you came today and talked about how that Fox, even though the chairman at the time was a TV man, and most people that have a little more age on them are TV only, but they made that step to go digital. And did this emanate from the Murdoch family, or was it someone advising them, or how did they make that step and then move into it so successfully?
I don't really know, but I think even, I think that there came this critical mass, this moment when everybody had to have a website and I think also you know how it is, and I really don't know, this is just my own speculation. I mean, when your competitors have a website, you have a website.
Right.
When they have a podcast, you have a podcast.
Right.
But now it's the future of our whole business is potentially digital.
Right.
And because it all kind of comes together, I mean, you can watch Fox News on your phone.
Right.
You can watch full shows on your phone. You can watch Hannity on your phone. You can watch Tucker Carlson's show on your phone. You can watch The Story with Martha McCallum. You can watch a whole hour's worth on your phone. It's pretty exciting. So then it merges together. It becomes all digital. Everything's digital. The TV show becomes digital and the print becomes digital and it's all there in that one little device.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have on my phone the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Times of London, and the Financial Times. Mm-hmm. You know, who would have ever thought? I mean, remember when I used to carry those papers on the plane, my fingers, I'd have to go wash my hands. That's over. Now, bring up the term analytics and algorithm, and then I want to talk to you about the software. You mentioned the software, and I was sitting there thinking, did you design at Fox your own software? Let's talk first about analytics. How often are they checking? Do you have a team checking analytics real time?
We're looking at analytics
24/7.
24/7. But we look at those numbers, you know, sometimes in a more like a scheduled fashion.
Sure.
As well. But we have various software platforms that allow us to check on things like everybody does. So we see what's clicking right now in real time, and then we see how are we doing for the month, how are we doing for the day, how are we doing for the year. Are we up, are we down? And then also we will look at specific stories. How did that story do? Given the resources we put into it or the placement, how did that story do?
Now, what I've observed about you is you're a real master at wordsmithing titles. And I think it's one of your secrets it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Tell us about that. I mean, your creativity with titles.
Oh, thank you. Well, we are being very mindful of what's called SEO, search engine optimization. So Hurricane Harvey, for example, more people were searching for Harvey than were searching for hurricane.
Right.
And you can test that in Google Trends, and you can test words side by side. You can test three words next to each other, and then you can see what's the thing people are really searching. Sometimes it's a little different than you'd expect. And sometimes if the person's name is hard to spell, it might be movie director because they couldn't spell something or other. So we check that, and we want those words, you want those big words that people are searching for, we want to make sure that those are in the first five words because that is what the search engine, the algorithm, the mathematical formula will pick up. And of course, that's a machine. That's not a human.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to put those words in the front of the headline, and then we'll maybe put something else, like a quote or something afterwards, after that. So it's a bit of a dance because you want to be creative for a real human, but you also have to please the machine.
Right.
So it's kind of a funny thing, you know. And sometimes, like if you look at some of our competition, sometimes a two-sentence headline isn't going to cut it anymore. And maybe a print paper would have done that or still does that. I'm thinking of some of the newspapers that they might just say, White House fun or White House craziness or something. But the search engine is not going to be picking up White House or craziness. People, if they're searching, they're searching for the name of the president, and they're not searching for craziness.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to be mindful of that as well.
Now, Fox has the largest audience on cable, correct?
Yes.
And you are the most watched.
Yes, we are the most watched.
And so when I travel internationally, I always try to find Fox.
Thank you.
And, generally I can dial into Fox. Are you global?
Yes. Yes, okay. We are global. Okay. We are seen in India. We are seen in Israel. We are seen in Europe.
Well, let's transition for a minute and talk about, one thing we've learned since you've been here is you've got a wonderful husband.
Thank you.
And I was really touched when I heard that he takes you to the train and meets you at the train.
Thank you.
And what a beautiful thing, you know. And as you know, nobody ever dying said, "I wish I'd spent more time at the office."
Yes.
What are the cherished things in your life?
Oh, thank you for asking. My family, my marriage, my faith, my friends. I feel so, I have to tell you, Jerry, I feel, sometimes I just feel gobsmacked by the life that I've been given to lead. You know, the other day I was running in Central Park before work. I'll come into the office early and then run in the park and then go to work. And I was thinking, you get to run in the park and you get to go to a news meeting at one of the most powerful news organizations in the world. And then you might in the evening meet your husband and go to one of the finest restaurants in the world, or you might go hear music at one of the finest halls in the world, at the Metropolitan Opera or the New York Philharmonic or Carnegie Hall. And then you get to go home and you get to do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel so blessed that I can lead this life. I really do. I think it's amazing. It's like if it were a game show and the host said, "Well, here's the life you've won." And I would say, "Oh my gosh, thank you, sign me up, I've hit the jackpot."
Mm, that is great. Now you also, we think about cognitive faith,
mm-hmm.
and we're reminded that the great commandment, when Jesus was asked, "What is it?" He said, "To love God with all your heart, your soul," but he included the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of intellectual processes that go into maximizing the digital platform. And we know that this millennial generation and the iGen generation, they have not had a world without this. And so they're constantly checking on things, and Google and the other search engines. But you've been involved in education for ministry as a mentor, and that has a real cognitive faith component.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like sharing that?
Oh, yes. So I'm an Episcopalian, and in my spare time, one of my passions is theology and leading this group of a small group of 12 people or less for 9 months out of the year, kind of on a faith journey every year. And we follow a curriculum that's been designed by the University of the South, Sewanee, that mimics a seminary course. So if you enroll in it in the first year, you study the Old Testament. Then the second year, the New Testament. The third year, you study the history of the Christian church from the apostles to the present. And the fourth year is theology, really developing a strong personal theology using the theology of famous people, I guess I would say. But additionally, you come together as a small group and you explore your faith. And the group is small enough that and if you do it right, it's a safe space to talk about questions and to say, "I'm not sure I believe in the virgin birth. I'm not sure I believe in the incarnation," or to say, "I believe in everything I've read in the Bible." And you have a chance to throw out your questions in a safe way, but also to learn from others, to see God working in their lives. And that, to me, is transformational. But it is because the questions are there.
Mm-hmm.
And people might say, "Well, where is the forgiveness in this story that we've just read here in the Bible?" Or where is, in your anecdote, where was that moment when you felt suddenly God was with you? And through that searching and that questioning process, something really big happens. And when you study the Bible through EFM, you're given a textbook written by a professor who's an expert in the New Testament, the Old Testament. And a lot of that reading is done on your own. So it's self-study. So you might spend 2 hours a week reading the Bible and then reading this textbook every week. But you're really doing that by yourself. So you're on a voyage of discovery by yourself, and then you come together once a week and share it. But a lot of that is inner work that you'll never have time to unpack with the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very profound. But I think the questions are so valuable, but also the examples of others' lives of faith where you think, "Oh, I never thought about that, but that's God there." Or, "Oh, she did that at the grocery store, and look what happened. Maybe I'll do that tomorrow."
After your talk this morning, I texted my wife because I've heard Christy say to me conversationally about God in every story. Yeah, very similar to what you shared. And it was really moving to me today to hear that and to hear that reiteration. But at 9/11 where you were, and so many of the news that you intersect in, I mean, God is at work, isn't he?
Yes, you know, it's funny. I didn't put this in my talk, and I kind of, now that I think of it, I kind of wish I had. But you'll relate to this. I was a medical producer at CBS for a while. I was working for our morning show, and it was actually really interesting to me. I became a medical field producer because I felt I needed to learn how to do field producing, where you go out in the field, and mm-hmm. you go to a remote location, you interview somebody, and you put together a little essay, a video essay about what you've learned and report on it. So I worked with a couple of different doctors. And the most interesting piece I ever did was about this drug that was made from the venom of a snail. It was some kind of poisonous snail, and a drug company was trying to develop this drug to fight pain. And I went out to Colorado, and I interviewed people who were experimentally using this drug and working on it. And it was really profound to me because one of the patients I interviewed had been in such profound distress from pain. And she talked on camera about the pain and what it was like, and that now this snail drug had helped her. And one of the doctors I met said, "We really don't know how to treat pain. And people are suffering because we're afraid of how to treat it or what to do." And this is well before the opioid crisis. I mean, this is mm-hmm. like 15 years ago, 10 years ago maybe. But they spoke so honestly on camera and so passionately, but also with such, I mean, it was really powerful the way they described these things, that I literally, when we left Colorado, I prayed. I remember praying, "Lord, may I do justice to this story." Because mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to tell it in a way that did justice to what they had shared with me.
It's amazing that when we get close to people and we hear, take the time to listen, what they will say. Mm-hmm. And Christy and I certainly have experienced that, listening to the heart of people, both in what activates them to faith and away from faith. We talked last night mm-hmm. that 9/11 for some was a moment to turn to God, and for some it was a moment to turn away from God.
Right.
It's strange, and yet a reality. Now, just before we close, you talked today to the students about discernment. Mm-hmm. And we do live in a world today where, you know, this particular probe before us now is, you know, in, I think, 60 minutes that you probably know far more about than I do. But I like to watch 60 Minutes every week.
It's a great show.
Yeah, it really is. And but it right near us in Austin was the gentleman that really worked with the Facebook vehicle in the recent election. And but what was your message to students and to all? I mean, I've been involved with news media, so I understand that discernment to a different level. But you talked about discernment. What are you telling the people to do, the young people?
Well, I think that, and we're all guilty of this, I think that kids see a story that maybe is from not a very reputable source.
Right.
And they believe every word of it. And then they act on that and they move on. Or they don't move on, they act on it, but they've only read one story from one source and that's it. And I'm trying to tell them that it's not just about reading that story and then believing every word. It's about to be all they can be and all that, to be the person that God made them to be. They need to kind of really process that story so that if they read something that maybe seems too good to be true, they explore a little more and find out maybe it is too good to be true. That if somebody says, "Oh, so-and-so, you know, hates horses," that they think, "Well, I gotta check that out." And it turns out, no, that person doesn't hate horses. They hated one horse on one farm. I mean, you know what I'm saying, that they... So my goal, and I probably should have been even more clear about this, is that people think a little bit before they react and make big judgments based on one story from one source that maybe ought to have some, where they need to dig deeper.
We're talking to Lynn Jordan Martin, the senior opinion editor at Fox News. We're just really honored that you came to HVU and to Houston. Just a final thought. I mean, what was the activation of you coming to faith? Was there
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
I know I've believed in God my whole life.
Right.
But what really changed my life was that education for ministry course. And you know, it's a really funny thing. A woman at my church put her hand on my elbow. She was already in it. And she put her hand like this, like on my upper elbow or my upper arm. And she said, "You must take EFM." And it felt like a lightning bolt went through me when she put her hand on me like that. And you know, I didn't do it right away. I held back. I was scared. And the first few weeks when I began this process, and I really tell people to just enroll 1 year at a time, even though you can be in it for 4 years. Just say, just take it, just like a renewing a lease. Once a year, you just figure out if you want to come back. But I was scared, and the first month I was there, I mean, honestly, I had a pit in my stomach. I just had a big knot. I was terrified of what is this, and what am I doing? And gradually, I found when I was in that class that things that I maybe thought about that were God, I went deeper. And I did do a process of discernment, and it just enriched my faith so much. And then a woman who was leading the class, who had been leading it for a long time, I had prayed, "Here I am, Lord, send me." And out of the blue, maybe a week later, I got a phone call, and she said, "I'm thinking of retiring. I need to do some other things, and I would like to ask you, would you like to be the mentor of this class?" And I didn't know what to do. And my husband said, "Well, you know, when Mary calls you on the phone, that's a really high honor, so you need to make a decision. You can't," because I probably would have let it go for months, not being overwhelmed by this privilege. And so I called her back, and I said, "Yes, I would like to do it." And I've been doing it ever since. I started doing it in my third year. But it was that, I always had faith, but that was a big moment for me.
And that, in your busy schedule, that's a commitment. But it is a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Well, here's what I find about real faith experiences. And I tried to tell that when I was trying to a person I was trying to recruit to join us this year. And I said, "Look, I do a lot of things that kind of suck the life out of me, but EFM fills me up. It nourishes me. And I promise you, if you come, you're going to be nourished. It's not going to be another thing that sucks your time away where you feel empty afterwards."
Well, you certainly have nourished and enriched us here, and we're grateful that you've come. Lynn Jordan Martin, the senior opinion editor at Fox News. We look forward to staying in touch with you in the days ahead.
Jerry, thank you so much for having me. It's been a true joy. Thank you.
At HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.